radio SBS en français, en ligne et sur votre smartphone.
The great pleasure of welcoming back on the French language program, Dr. Edward Dyker. Hello.
Hello.
And you've been away for the past 6 months, thanks to the Australian Council, and you're now working on the research for a biography of La Pérouse.
That's correct. I had the great privilege to have the use of the Keesing Studio at the Cité Internationale des Arts in Paris. It's in the Marais. It's a wonderful location. And to have 6 months to just concentrate on primary research, it was a wonderful opportunity. Look, the biography of someone who was born 275 years ago, inevitably, it presents historiographical challenges, there's no doubt. The range of surviving documents from the 18th century is very limited. Often the handwriting is very difficult. Spelling can be idiosyncratic and archaic, and sometimes even have, there'll be words from once vibrant local languages and dialects there that you don't expect. Certainly one letter from La Pérouse's mother had words from Occitan, which threw me a little. But when the subject of biographical research is someone like La Pérouse, who disappeared before he could forward his final papers, it's even more difficult to reconstitute his achievements. In circumstances like that, letters, journal fragments, dispatches sent back to Europe from colonial outposts, and of course the testimony of those who quit the expedition and returned to France before its tragic final outcome in the Solomon Islands, those documents are very precious.
How is the research going? Is it challenging for you?
I began with a 40-page research plan when I arrived in Paris on the 2nd of February. I should say that I'd also done about 5 days of research in Macau, because that was one of La Pérouse's landfalls, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to break the journey to France and do some research there on the way.
And what did you find there?
Well, one of the things I was after there is La Pérouse recruited a dozen Chinese sailors in Macau. They were almost certainly the first Chinese to come to New South Wales, if not Australia. But we don't even know their names. And unfortunately, I didn't find those names. The Portuguese archives in Macau are limited. But look, I did get some useful background information about life then. And also, La Pérouse was trying to sell, or did sell, sea otter pelts that he had collected in Alaska. And so I wanted to research more about that market, but that was useful. In France, of course, I had the ability to use the enormous range of material that's in the Archive National, and that was only about 10 minutes walk away from my studio. The Pierrefitte site, of course, is at the end of the metro line near Saint-Denis. That takes a little longer to get to, but I worked systematically through documents in the Marine series. I complemented this or those with very productive research among notarial records. The Minutière Centrale in Paris is a rich repository in the Archives Nationales. And I found, for example, I found La Pérouse's marriage contract. I found an inventory of his widow Louise Eleanor Brudeau's estate after her death. I found a sweeping procuration that La Pérouse signed prior to going on his last final voyage. And I also searched for notarial documents about La Pérouse's friends and associates. I was struck by his connections with some of France's wealthiest individuals. And I gathered background information on the Le Couteau, La Borde, Sutton de Clonard families. That last family, Sutton de Clonard, they were in fact Irish. I think it'll surprise a lot of Australians that Robert Sutton de Clonard, who commanded the Astrolabe when it entered Botany Bay in January 1788, was Irish. He was born in Wexford, apparently. Command of that vessel had devolved to him because Fleur de Langue had been killed in Samoa. But I was also surprised at, as I say, how wealthy some of these people were. La Pérouse was a personal friend of the banker Laurent Lecouteux, and he stayed with him a number of times in the Rue Montorgueil during his visits to Paris. The Laborde family and Sutton de Clonard, they were families too that were tainted by slavery. Their wealth in part was derived from the exploitation of slave labour and even the slave trade. La Pérouse's future father-in-law, Abraham Brudeau, was definitely involved in the slave trade, as was his older, was La Pérouse's brother-in-law. And, you know, one of the things that I found is conclusive evidence that La Pérouse himself owned at least one slave when he was in Mauritius, when he owned land in Mauritius.
And what's happened to that land now?
Well, there's a monument not far from Curepipe at Menil that records his
presence,
his life there, and it's recently it's a few years ago now, but was renovated. He purchased that land with a fellow officer called Charles Mongaudelage. He was in Mauritius for between 1772 and 1778, and as I'm sure you know, that's where he met his future wife, Eleanor Brudeau. She wasn't actually born in Mauritius; she was born in Nantes. But her father certainly died in Mauritius, and she had sisters who were still living in Mauritius when she herself died, and they wanted an inventory of her estate after her death. There seems to have been some bickering between La Pérouse's surviving sisters and Eleanor Brudeau's surviving sisters. And, of course, in between was the British capture of Mauritius, and these differences over the estate continued during the Restoration. All these kinds of documents helped to shed light on someone's life. I also did quite a bit of research on a naturalist called Jean-Nicolas Dufresne, who left the La Pérouse expedition in Macau. Previous scholars of the expedition weren't even aware of his first names. But at the Archives Nationales, I found several documents written by him. And I should say that I came across a book published in the 1830s after this man's death that said that he left a manuscript of his journal. And I thought, well, that would be a particularly precious thing to find if I could, because, as I mentioned earlier, an expedition that disappeared before all its final papers could be returned, any documents, any letters home are precious, or any journals in particular are particularly precious. I never found his journal. I did make contact with descendants of the family. But what I found was where he quoted himself, a document in which he quoted substantial extracts from his own journal in Alaska. And I felt particularly pleased to find that. But there were other sources. For example, I found letters written, and beautiful, loving letters written by La Pérouse's armourer and watchmaker, Pierre Guéry, letters he wrote home to his wife and child. And ultimately, she used those letters to try and get assistance from the naval ministry. But, you know, it's quite sad. These families, they did not know what happened to their loved ones. And this expedition just simply disappeared. And it wasn't until 1828 that
the mystery was solved.
Yeah, well, that they realised that it had been wrecked in the Solomon Islands, probably hit by a cyclone. But even then, there were stories that persisted about survivors elsewhere, but of course, no others were found.
So there's a gap of 40 years.
Yes. So there were letters that I had the great privilege to hold in my own hand. A letter, for example, that one of the young officers, a garde de la marine, Lord de Lauriston, wrote from Botany Bay in February 1788 to his father, former governor of Pondicherry, in fact. Another letter from the botanist, Boisseau de la Martinière, that's held in the Bibliothèque Centrale du Muséum National d'Histoire Naturelle in Paris, written in, again, Botany Bay in February 1788. And there's another one that I looked at. There was one that the astronomer Le Put d'Argelais wrote to the Marquis de Condorcet, who was then the perpetual secretary of the Académie des Sciences. That's held in the Bibliothèque de l'Institut de France. And as I say, I felt a great privilege to be able to look at these letters. And they were some of the earliest letters sent from Australia to Europe, if you think about it, February 1788, month after the establishment of the British colony.
Quite amazing, yeah.
Yes. So, I was able to visit the church in which, the Church of Sainte-Marguerite in the 11th arrondissement, from memory, where La Pérouse and Eleanor Brudeau finally married, virtually a decade after they first met, despite obstacles. I was surprised, actually, to discover that some of my own ancestors had lived in the same parish. That wasn't. They left there in 1737 to go and work for the Navy in Brest, and eventually then made their way to Mauritius too. But among some of the manuscripts that I found, I realised that La Pérouse's bride was residing in the Abbaye de Saint-Antoine when they married, and this later became the Hôpital de Saint-Antoine, and there are still parts of that original abbey that still exist, and I tended to leave excursions like that for a Sunday when archives and libraries weren't open, and I would do something else relevant to my project on those days. The day I went to visit the Hôpital Saint-Antoine was May Day, and my wife Susan was with me, and she's often been a great help. She's a heritage architect, so she enjoys that kind of challenge. But we came out, and the May Day march was a particularly violent march that day, and the march was broken up with tear gas, and we had great difficulty getting home. We also visited the grave of La Pérouse's widow in Père Lachaise. We went and saw the painting that Nicolas-André Monsieur did of La Pérouse receiving his instructions from Louis XVI. That's at Versailles. There's a copy here at the Mitchell Library in Australia that a lot of people are perhaps, a lot of Australians are familiar with anyway. I did research at the Archives de l'Académie des Sciences, the Bibliothèque de l'Histoire de la Médecine at Paris Descartes. That was particularly on some of the surgeons of the expedition and the botanist, Joseph Hugues Boisseau de la Martinière, who interests me very much. I found the thesis that he wrote during his medical studies at Montpellier.
And do you have a time frame for the biography?
No, when I think my biography of Dumont d'Urville, from the beginning until publication, was 7 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how long. I mean, I think this, to be honest, this is going to take me more than, this was going to take me at least 5 years of that, I'm pretty certain. I came home with four very full notebooks 25 gigabytes of material in digital form, PDFs and photographs of manuscripts and other research photographs, and about 5 kilograms of photocopies and printouts, and 50 kilograms of books. When you're dealing with difficult handwriting, it takes a while to go through this sort of material and understand fully what you've found. And
have you approached any publishers yet?
No, I haven't, although I'm hopeful that there would be some interest in Australia. La Pérouse is known in Australia. But equally, since my last book was also published by University of Hawaii Press, and La Pérouse visited Hawaii along with Monterey in California and Alaska as well, and the other thing that people don't often realise, well, many Australians anyway, is that La Pérouse played an important part in the American War of Independence. So I suspect that there would be an American market for a biography such as this. I can hope. But,
what was his involvement in the American War of Independence?
Well, as part of France's naval engagement, essentially. For a time, it was based in Boston, and I'd like to go to Boston. But there's also his raid on Hudson Bay that I'd like to research, what's now Churchill, Fort Prince of Wales, I think it was then. And he captured that fort, but he gained a good reputation for his treatment of prisoners and ensured that people did not starve or freeze to death. He himself had been a prisoner of war during the Seven Years' War, and that was another interesting aspect of my research this time. I collaborated with I had some very kind assistance from an English cousin, Pauline Currien. I was doing research at the Archive National and helping to guide her doing research in Greenwich at the National Maritime Museum. Essentially, the mystery of La Pérouse's, he was taken prisoner on the Formidable in 1759. We know that he was wounded. We know that he was eventually released by the British. But exactly when, when he gave his word that he would not fight against the British until he was exchanged, and that parole that he signed was in Vannes in Brittany on the 10th of December 1759. So that was an important discovery.
I must say that this period of French, Australian, Mauritian history is a continuous fascination for you.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you've written a lot of books on French explorers and exploration of the South Seas.
And a number of the people I've written about went in search of La Pérouse. I wrote a biography of the botanist La Billardière, who accompanied d'Henri Cousteau. My mother and I did a book on d'Henri Cousteau as well. And, of course, Dumont d'Urville helped to confirm the fate of La Pérouse. So it's about time that I actually looked at the man himself. And
have you got a working title yet?
At the moment, I have no working title, no. But it may just be La Pérouse. I don't know.
Dr. Edward Dyker, thank you so much, and we wish you all the best for this forthcoming biography on La Pérouse.
I'm sure we'll talk more about this, Jean-Noël. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
SBS en français. Partagez nos rubriques sur Facebook.